Okay, Senator Adams, Senator Green, myself, Senator Parnell. This morning, we have a couple things on the agenda. First is an overview I asked for from Legislative Finance on state revenue stability, followed by a capital project overview that Senator Torgerson will share on the University of Alaska. I asked for this, it's a relatively short presentation by Leg Finance on state revenue stability because we all know in our heads how volatile oil revenues are, but this will give us a much better, I think, at least for me it has, a much better historic picture of the volatility of oil revenues that we rely on so heavily for our state general fund. And if we could have Leg Finance, whoever's going to give the presentation, Ginger Blaisdell and Dave Teal, come on up, and you can either work from that end of the table, or if you're going to use the overhead, feel free to work up from the front of the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm David Teal from Legislative Finance, and with me is Ginger Blaisdell, also of Legislative Finance. You all know in the fourth year of a five-year plan designed to reduce or eliminate fiscal gap, or simply just the amount that expenditures exceed revenue. And the focus of that plan has been primarily on the expenditure side. And real progress has been made, but I think it's the committee will certainly be looking at other ways to reduce expenditures. That's not what we're here to discuss. You asked us to look at the revenue side of the picture this morning. And none of you are freshmen, so you all know that since you left last May, oil prices tanked, and you came back to a $1.1 billion budget gap, a fiscal gap, which is roughly 50% of the budget. That's certainly not a pleasant surprise, but I think that if Rip Van Legislator had started his 20-year sleep back in 1979, and we're here he'd be trying to convince you how lucky you are to even be concerned about oil prices. Because 20 years ago, there was a feeling that permanent fund earnings would replace oil revenue as the primary and stable source of state funding. Not because of price declines, but because of production decline. As you know, the production decline has been held up much better than anticipated. So price is still an issue. But back to the present fiscal gap, it is much bigger than anticipated. In fact, it's so big that I don't think anybody reasonably expects to close the entire gap from the expenditure side. And therefore, actually, we haven't seen changes in anticipated expenditures, yet we see the gap widening with each passing day of low oil prices. So the result is more attention now on the revenue side of that fiscal gap. And several people on Leg Finance staff spent many hours gathering this data, and Ginger is here to present what we came up with. So I'll turn it over to Ginger.
And the first graph started with 25 years of actual, or closer to actual, authorized numbers. It brought us back to 1973. That was about 2 years before the oil production really got started. And then we have 99, which we're currently in, and the year 2000, as I will drop out here. I think a couple of the most important pieces that you'll see on this graph is that this bottom line is our standard general fund revenues, which we're considering everything that is non-oil related. This magenta or pink, whatever color this part is our oil revenues. And that includes taxes, property tax, severance tax, rents and royalties, It's everything that has to do with oil, not just the price per barrel. And what you can see is obviously this big peak here, which is 1981-82. This is $34.92 a barrel at 2 million barrels per day production.
Wow.
And it didn't last real long, but we certainly capitalized on an unexpected market, a very positive market. This little high peak right here is the Gulf War. And again, we had projected a little bit lower, the prices went up, and that was also very helpful to us. And 97 is just an unexpectedly high price oil year. At one of the more important things to see, though, is that even with high price years and higher production, we have a basic trend of oil not being the most stable economic revenue for our state. It tends to continue to decline. And probably the most significant thing to say on this chart. It is very volatile. You can see a simple drop in price, production. Everything causes to be a very unstable or very volatile source of income.
Does anybody have any questions or discussion on this? And we can come back to it. But the one thing that's really demonstrated to me here is that the stability or certainty of the other revenues versus the stability and certainty of the oil revenues. And that was just driven home to me by this chart.
These small spikes in here are due to settlements, some unexpected earnings. A couple of them are interesting, and one of them is a settlement. The largest settlement here actually is due to the oil settlement, but it's due to activity that happened in previous years, and we finally just got a payment here. And when I talked to the Department of Revenue, they felt that because it's a settlement, it really isn't part of what we would consider oil revenue earnings. It was kind of a one-time event. And those one-time events do impact our regular general fund funding that's non-oil related.
And Ginger, on that, that spike in the blue at around FY 85 or 86,
mm-hmm.
that settlement, that was pre-CBR, right?
Yes.
And so,
yes.
So the other settlements,
right. Any other settlements that we're collecting out here on oil and mineral royalties are going into the CDR instead of into our general fund.
Start
and that's pre-1990 and post-1990 of CDR.
Senator Wilkin, did you have something?
That was my question. Okay.
The one on our paper, it was printed a little bit differently, but basically what this shows, that this pink line is the Department of Revenue's price per barrel projection. This dark blue line is where the price per barrel actually was in the last about, not quite 20 years. What this shows, though, is that the Department of Revenue typically projects very close to what the actuals are. And you know, we get a lot of questions on should we use CIRA's oil projections, should we use Bloomberg's, should we use Department of Revenue's, who should we use? And we based our last few budgets, I think, on Department of Revenue's projections, and it's pretty close. Over the last 20 years, they've averaged 82 cents a barrel less than what we've actually earned. So I think they have a fairly conservative projection. These last three lines here are where they're, this is year 2000, 2001, 2003, and they are projecting an increase, and we don't have actuals for that yet, but I just wanted to show where they expect it to go back up again.
Senator Torgerson?
These are the spring forecast projections.
Were they spring forecasts from last year, Ginger?
Right. They are spring forecasts on all of these data points. And this is just this is the projection that they came out with this past January. jumping slide right here. This is what this shows you is the impact of production on our oil revenue. And the top line here is $20 a barrel, $15 a barrel, and $10 a barrel. And what it shows is that at a production level here, if we were getting $10 a barrel, we're at $1.1 billion. As production continues to decline, say in the year 2020, the same $10 a barrel is only going to get us to about $500 million. And the other thing to notice is that as production continues to decline, the amount of fluctuation between each dollar per barrel, what our earnings is, also declines. So a $5 difference here isn't going to have nearly the impact of a $5 change up here with a higher production. And so I think this is also based on the current fields that we have with their current attrition rate. And, you know, if we get a new oil field, you know, maybe our production will go up again. The second thing to look at is there's a $10 difference here. And if you were to say we got $0 per barrel and you drop down to here, you see there's still some money that we're being made. This part is our oil severance taxes, corporate petroleum tax, property taxes. So there are other funds that are coming in with oil revenue. The problem is that if you were to drop below $10 per barrel, exponentially it's going to drop at a much faster rate of decline. As you drop lower, the oil fields are going to produce less. As they produce less, some of their taxes actually go away. There is sort of a schedule of how much you produce as to what tax rate you would end up receiving. So I guess the same thing would be if you go above, I think it's $23 and $9 are the two extremes. If you go above $23 exponentially, it would go up. You would make more.
Senator Wilkin?
Ginger, could you call out on that graph the production levels of those years? Could you show on there?
No, I have that on another.
It'd be interesting, just so when we show that graph, we can talk about in relation to a million barrels a day.
I believe that this one gets us down to about 445,000 barrels a day instead of a million. So I think that's how far out this graph went. It looks right about there.
Could you put that on that graph for future reference?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Before we move on, as I looked at this, I've been really focused on the instability of price and its impact. But what this graph showed me was that declining production is the 20 million pound gorilla around our necks in terms of declining revenue. You know, price is stability, but production also is key here. And you know, in most of our lifetimes, we're going to be at, if without barring any huge new production, we're going to be at a level of revenue somewhere in the $500-700 million range for our state budget if we continue this path. So that was what became more sobering for me was not only the price volatility, but that production and declining production is going to have a significant impact on us as a state. Senator Wilkin.
Just comment on that. Chairman, because I agree with you, and in the last couple of weeks as I've talked to people at home and just people that have visited me in the office, they all talk about oil price. And what I've learned in 2 weeks is that we also need to talk that today we were at 1.8 in 1990, we're now at 1.1. So that adds a little to the argument, and then I throw on the idea about the severance tax from 12% headed for 6. So you're right, then we need to talk about those things because everybody's focused in on that price. And they think if the price goes up, the savior will come, but in fact, that's not the case at all. So I would agree with what the chairman has said, that we talk about all three of those issues.
One little thing, I put some just general comments on your handout so that you could, you know, if you talk to somebody, you can draw some comparisons. I thought one that was interesting here is that to make $1.257 billion, which is what we're trying to get to this year. We actually need about $45 a barrel this year to get to that dollar price. And in year 2020, with a 3% inflation, or no, in year 2020 with today's dollars, it's $91 a barrel to get back to $1.257 billion. So,
excuse me.
Senator Kelly?
The first one you said, Ginger, was at the $45 was where?
That is with today's production being $11.58 to get up to $1.257 billion would have to be $45 a barrel.
And the 1.2, okay.
And that's where we were projecting to be.
Every car's on the street. Oh, Mr. Wizard, I don't want to be a finance person anymore.
The red bars
this is better
are our revenues. And you can see our revenues continue the same spike that our oil revenue shows. And the blue dots show our expenditures. I think you can tell our expenditures were fairly steady as oil was coming on. Obviously, went way up when we started having very good years with our oil revenue earnings. Had a couple of dips in here. This big spike right here, $1.8 billion was appropriated to the permanent fund. The money was actually dispersed over a four-year period, so depending on how you look at it, you could kind of level this out slightly. This big spike here in spending was a $1.8 billion capital budget that was appropriated in that year. This is the big decline. Actually, 86, the oil prices dropped, but 87 is where it was really the impact really took place. And you'll see that the spending dropped the next year, but suddenly we got more money and spending went back up. So try to resolve it in 86 and
didn't
stay so we go ahead and increase our spending again. And our spending has been relatively stable. It's come down from the last couple of years, but a relatively stable line. But it's our revenues that we look at where we find our instability. In these areas where there is a large gap, the white spaces basically are fiscal gaps. Each of these has been filled in with other of our state savings accounts. Statutory budget reserve filled in. It was developed right here. Statutory budget reserve was developed here. Filled in this gap. CBR was developed, filling in this gap. So we do save money, and then we also do spend it to fill in those gaps. And right now, we have this gap facing us. We don't know if we're going to have a spike in revenue. Well, we currently capable right now, but we do need to work on that gap. And then just for specific points on the chart, I've bulleted a number of the years where there is either exceptionally high revenue or low revenue. And on the last page, just a number of items with our expenditures that describe either why they were way up or way down. And this is all just talking about general fund expenditures and general fund revenues. It doesn't take into account all the other fund sources.
Any questions for Ginger or before we turn off the overhead? Thank you. Anything further, David Teal? Mr. Teal?
No, Chairman, if you have any questions, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to stand in recess for just about a minute before we head into the capital budget portion. So we're in recess.
We are now going to have an overview on the University of Alaska's request for capital for their operations throughout the state of Alaska. We have joining us at the table Wendy Redmond from the university, and we're waiting for the LIO person to come up and hook us into Fairbanks where we have some more people to testify. It'll be about 4 minutes or so, Wendy, before that happens. So you can start us out, and we'll catch up with the folks in Fairbanks a little later. So if you identify yourself for the record and go ahead and make your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Wendy Redmond. I'm the Vice President for the Statewide University of Alaska System. This is my first time testifying at this new table. I have to tell you, it's really big.
Can you speak up?
Several of you are new on finance, so I don't know how much detail you want me to go into. Much of our capital budget, the bulk of the money, in fact, over 50% of it, is in deferred maintenance, renewal, and replacement, which are issues that the finance committees in both the House and the Senate have dealt with in incredible detail over the last several years. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know how much detail you want me to go into on the deferred maintenance piece of it, except to just give you a brief overview. We have included the total amount of the deferred maintenance right now is $139.6. It is our, continues to be our top funding priority in the capital budget. We have had the great support of the legislature over the last 5 or 6 years in trying to deal with this problem. The university has really taken the leadership in the state in the last decade in trying to educate the public and ourselves about the issue of deferred maintenance. The task force that the legislature set up a couple of years ago was extremely helpful also in bringing the issue to the forefront of both the legislature and the public. We really need to continue the progress that we've been making. We went a couple of years with very small appropriations. We got last year, we got $42 million. If we could get another 3 or 4 appropriations in that range over the next 3 or 4 years, we'll be able to really get a handle on the problem. If we don't make annual adjustments of about $30 million, we tend to take one step forward and two back. It's the kind of problem you just have to get in front of. As many of you know, and for those of you who don't know, the Board of Regents, when this problem first began to become critical about 6 years ago, began a process internally of reallocating money into our maintenance budgets to assure that as we were taking care of the deferred maintenance with the help of the legislature, that it wouldn't occur again. So we've appropriated, we've added 84%, increased our maintenance budgets by 84% since 1994. We've reallocated almost $8 million from operating expenses in programmatic expenses over into the maintenance budgets to bring those budgets up, so on an annual basis now we are fully funding what the national formula says we should on the maintenance side. The additional piece, replacement and renovation piece, is not something that we're able to fully fund internally. That is something that we're going to need to continue to have annual appropriations for the actual replacement. We think it's probably in the category of about $15 million a year for the renewal and replacement. The university has about 44% of all state facilities belong to the university. And it's more like 55% of the ones that are over 20 years old. So we're a big player in the facility market, and unfortunately we're a big player in the facility. But I think it's significant that we have attempted to take care of this problem internally. The partnership with the legislature has been extremely helpful, and I think that we are, if we can continue receiving regular appropriations on the deferred maintenance side and on the R&R side, that we'll take care of the internal M&R and that we'll be able to assure that our facilities are protected into the future. So we're hopeful that we can continue that partnership this year. We'll be doing, we have a book that we put together each year on the deferred maintenance that lists, we keep an inventory of all of the projects, exactly where they are, which campuses, which facilities, as well as a historical outlook on what we've done to date with the money that you've given us. So that will be ready in the next couple of weeks. Any other specific questions on
You said the book would be ready for that in a couple of weeks, yeah. Deferred maintenance, so we'll be able to see which projects you have. Okay, Senator Donnelly and Senator Kelly.
Just a technical question. Where will they appear in the capital budget?
They're the number one priority in our capital budget.
I mean, but we're in the actual document. Yeah, the University of Alaska, there's the one project, but
that's it. They only had, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was only one project put in. You submitted it to the governor only put one project in, that was the Hutchinson Center?
I'm sorry, in the governor's budget, where did it go, Senator? It's not included in the governor's budget.
Is that true, that the Hutchinson Center is the only one, the 5.5, is that what actually was in the governor's budget? And the rest of these did not make it. Is there also, I know there's another piece of legislation on the Anchorage Consortium Library, I haven't read, had an opportunity to read it yet, but is there other legislation that you know of that covers any of your capital needs?
Mr. Chairman, not yet.
Senator Kelly?
I have a couple questions here, and I think you covered them. If you could just kind of refresh me. You had said that you need about $30 million per year. And does that give you, do you advance on the problem at $30 million? Okay. That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Maybe I better ask that. I may be confused. I was prepared to go through the university's capital request. Did you want me to just address the governor's capital request?
Well, I think you only have one. But my understanding is this request that we have before us is what you submitted to the governor.
Yes, sir.
And through his process, however ranked it or whatever, only one project made it into his actual budget. Senator Kelly.
Wendy, you had said also that you had reallocated some money from the operating budget to it, and you gave a number.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, $7.6 million over the last 4 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lehman, do you have a question?
Well, it was on capital. If you want to go through it, I can ask you now. This $21 million for the UAF School of Fisheries, is that number consistent with the very recently announced reduced plans or maybe it's delayed funding plans by the federal government for that facility? Is that consistent with the program that is now envisioned?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lehman, yesterday, I think they just announced yesterday, NOAA did, that the funding for that facility, the federal portion of the facility, had been somewhat reduced. I think what's happened is that they've reached a compromise with Senator Stevens and Senator Gordon from Washington State, where the facility here in Juneau now is intended to be primarily a research facility and that they would maintain some of the administrative portion of it in Seattle. So they've scaled back, I think it was, they've scaled back from probably $80 million to now a total of $50 million on their project here. And the news report I heard yesterday, I think, was that they were going to be appropriating $36 million over the next 3 years from the federal portion. It doesn't change anything for our $20 million. Our facility was always a research facility. So, excuse me, at this point, my understanding is that our piece will remain the same.
And your portion is that $21 million, I haven't been looked through this carefully, but is that proposed to be state general funds?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lehman, yes it is. And what you'll see is we put into the OO request $5 million because things were still in time. We knew it was going to be $21 million total. We just didn't know what the out year was going to be and how to do that. So we put in the $5 million so we could proceed with the planning and design of the facility. So we'll, as we get more information, we'll make an adjustment in the budget if we get a final. Go ahead.
Senator Wilkins, thank you. And on that, that's the Lena Point facility?
Is that, sir,
what we're talking about?
So on that, the federal appropriation is not contingent upon a match. So the $21 million you're talking about is a completely separate facility.
Mr. Chairman, it is not contingent upon a match. However, Senator Stevens and Senator Murkowski have certainly indicated to us that NOAA's willingness and eagerness to relocate this major facility from Washington State to Alaska would definitely and will definitely be enhanced by the state's willingness to make an appropriation to the facility.
The $22 million would relocate, what is it, about 500 jobs down there? Is that?
I don't know the details now on the number of positions, but it's significant.
But the intent is the Alaska Fisheries Research Center that's located in Seattle would be in Alaska? Is that? What a concept. We are joined by Ann Ringstedt now in Fairbanks, so if there's any questions for her, or we'll go to her and see if she has anything to say here in a little bit when we finish up. Other questions for Mrs. Redmond?
Mr. Chairman, well, before I leave the deferred maintenance and renewal and replacement, I do want to say that the governor's office has been extremely helpful over the last 4 years in trying to work with us on the maintenance and renewal and replacement. And though there's not an appropriation in the budget this year, I still am hopeful that, and I think that it is the administration's intent to try to work with us to see if we can find some other funding option as the session goes forward with the legislature and the executive branch to try to deal with that maintenance problem. The second big priority in our budget this year, the second priority is under the instructional equipment and telecommunications. We've requested $7.5 million. It's been over a decade since we've had a major appropriation of any kind for equipment. The equipment includes library books. I think there's this year about $900,000 total in there for library books. One of the biggest problems that we've had, and particularly those of you from Anchorage, I think, can appreciate this difficulty because we scramble every year in Anchorage. We're trying to get the base budget up for library books has just been extraordinarily difficult for us. So these kind of capital appropriations are really the second best way we can do it to do some one-time buying has been the best opportunity for us. Our student labs and instructional equipment are getting seriously behind the times. I've been told by an employer group in Anchorage that the electronics program, which is a very high-paying and excellent career field, that the students at the Anchorage campus were not being trained on equipment that's up to date. And that's just criminal. And the community colleges around the state are also in the same situation. We just simply have to get an infusion of some instructional and laboratory equipment, particularly in some of our vocational and scientific areas. In looking at the new construction, and of course, you know, I get the question every year when we have a maintenance and repair and renovation and replacement and renewal problem as large as we have, how do we possibly consider building anything new? Legitimate question. But I think that the answer to that is that we really can't stop progress while we're fixing the facilities. There are new things that also need to be done at the same time. So we're trying to cautiously go forward with new construction where we think it's really essential and critical. And we've really prioritized new construction projects based on five criteria. How the project meets a particular strategic initiative, the demonstrated need, the partnership potential that it creates, the degree to which the project will be self-supporting, that is, that some of the operating costs can be supported either by instructional tuition or by research revenues, and the degree to which there is a developed plan for the project. So within that context, the priorities for the new facilities for this year, the number one priority is for the Hutchison Center at the Tanana Valley campus in Fairbanks. That's a joint partnership with the school district where they share a facility. The community of Fairbanks will be going forward with a bond, I think this fall. Their share of it is $10 million, and our share will be $5 million. And people are very excited about it. It's a wonderful partnership. It allows a lot of opportunities for students at the school district as well as the community college to share programs The second priority is...
Cindy, on that, is it safe to assume that if the bond issue fails, that your part fails also?
Correct.
Thank you.
I would be shocked if the bond issue fails, but...
Didn't we have a run in other schools up there for 3 or 4 years and have... I don't know. I don't want to get into that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, they have failed, but I think one of the things that people were concerned about in the bond issue compared to them is that they were not for vocational job training, and that's what people wanted to see.
Well,
it's a very popular...
This kind of brings me to timing. If I know it's your number one request. It looks like maybe your smallest one, too, so maybe that's what made it number one. But the bond question wouldn't be on until October, so the appropriation or the building probably isn't going to, well, I'm just concerned about timing or if the timing is correct to match up with the bonding money or if that should be considered for an 01 capital project instead of a 00. But
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure when their bond issue is going on. I'm not sure if it is going on in October.
Most generally, it's the first, you know, the first Tuesday in October. Okay, thank you.
The second new facility priority, and this has been on the list for several years, is the library classroom facility at the Anchorage campus. $9 million was appropriated last year by the legislature to allow us to proceed with the planning, design, and some work on the grounds. I think they were going to be putting in a parking lot first for the facility. There is additional legislation that is in on this facility as well. The NOAA facility is next.
Excuse me, Senator Donnelly.
How much money has been expended so far, and how much do you anticipate to expend over the next fiscal year on that?
Mr. Chairman, can I ask if Pat Pitney is on the phone, our budget director, whether or not any of that $9 million how much of that has been expended? Do you know, Pat?
Not off the top of my head, but I can find out. It's a small amount that has been spent, if it's been spent.
Thank you. If you would get that information and send it to us, we'll distribute it to committee members. Other questions? Go ahead, Mrs. Whitburn.
The next priority is the NOAA facility, the School of Fisheries facility here in Juneau, which is a UAS joint facility. I think we covered most of the issues on that facility. The next priority is the Mason.
Senator Adams.
Say the federal congressman wants us to put some match money into it, you know, where's that in
Bristol Bank?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Adams, they know that we have the $5 million in our request this year, so I'm assuming that that is a sufficient amount. We didn't feel we were ready to put in the full amount yet, since the federal piece had not fully come together.
Go ahead.
The next priority is on the UAF residential dining facilities. It's a major renovation request, and at this list, it goes well beyond what we would have needed for any kind of maintenance a regular R&R. It really needs to be redesigned. The kitchen is very old and is not adequate at this point to be able to provide good service to the students.
Sure. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kelly.
Just on that, I think it was interesting in the decline of students in the last few years at UAF, or in the last year at UAF, the exit interviews showed that it wasn't because of they weren't getting a good education or that they didn't have the adequate level of funding, is that the food services in the building were not up to standards, and this kitchen is a serious problem, and I think it needs to be addressed.
Go ahead and continue.
The next priority is for a classroom addition, $7 million at the Juneau campus, our fastest growing campus. Their classrooms, if any of you have been out of the facility, they're crammed into three very small buildings. This will add 16 new classrooms to this campus. The next one is the Bristol Bay campus, $900,000. This has, again, been on our budget request for many years. I can tell you, from my perspective, this is probably the biggest, one of the biggest needs we have. It's the campus is currently housed in essentially what is a house, like a three-bedroom house in Bristol Bay, and they have faculty and students who are four people crammed into a room that's a 10 by 12 X bedroom. So the need is tremendous. They're working closely with other members of the community in Bristol Bay to try to do a partnership project where they will work with the library that's close by the campus to try to maximize their facility needs. The next project is a construction of a biology and chemistry lab at the Citra campus. This is another renovation. As some of you know, we have taken the old World War II hangars that were in Sitka at Ponsky Island and renovated those and turned them into campus. It's been a very cost-effective project for us. We have one of the hangars that's been completely redone. This is in now adding on a, I think it's on the second floor, to add in a science lab that will be used jointly, excuse me, again with the university and with Sheldon Jackson College there and the Mount Edgecombe High School, which is located contiguous to the campus and system. Currently, our students are having to go to the local high schools off the island in order to have, we have no lab space at all for the campus. The next priority is the small business development program. Senator Donnelly is probably the most familiar with this one. This is, historically, this has been funded in the capital budget. It came over as a grant. It continues to be funded in the capital budget. This is the same amount of money they've been generating, or been receiving for the last decade.
Senator Donnelly.
But it's not in the governor's capital budget this year? Okay. Just want to make sure.
No, and of course, this is an extremely highly leveraged account. They bring in about, I can't remember now, sorry, $3 or $4 million a year.
How many years have has that been funded?
It's been with the university now for about 5 years. It came over to us from the Department of Commerce. They moved it over, and it's been being funded like this. And frankly, I think it's their preference that it continue to be funded like this, probably because if it's in the operating budget, it would have been slashed by now within the university. I'm sure that the people at the Small Business Development Center feel that this is a better option for them. That the vagaries of trying to get it funded in the capital budget are, no matter how bad those are, they're better than having to deal with the university internally. So that's my assessment of why they do it this way, and they're probably right. I won't go into all of the other projects unless you really want to. We have included in our budget the projects into the out years, 01 through 04. We've included those in the list of projects because they're important projects and we want to keep them as a high priority and keep them in front of the legislature so you're aware of the kinds of issues and projects that we're looking at over the course of the next couple of years. I can discuss them if you'd like me to. But
let's see if there's any questions to this point. Senator Wilkins. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wendy, I just want to make sure that I understand, the committee understands, the Hutch Career Center, that's about a $20 million project. That 5.5 is about half of what's needed on behalf of the general fund to get it started. So in answer to your question, the bond issue will be voted on, and it will be back again next year for another 5.5 to complete the project. So that 5.5 doesn't get it done. Is that, if I remember right, that's how it's been looked at?
The information I have is that the school district's going out for $14 million and they're looking at $21 million total.
So the 5.5 from.
So the 5.5, $14 million bond, and then the planning money, the 1.6 that we we got last year for the planning money. Also included in that $14 million bond is some renovation, some additional renovation items beyond the...
So Pat, the 5.5 then does take care of the complete obligation from the state to the project?
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah, mine too.
Thank you. I was under a different impression, but that's been in a state of flux, so perhaps that's been sorted out. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
please. If I may, there's one thing I forgot, and it's very important, actually. In the governor's, the last priority that I forgot was the $800,000 in program receipt authority for the recreation center here at the Juneau campus. And that was not included in the governor's budget. I think it may have been an accident that it wasn't included, because since it is program receipt, non-general fund authority, and the Juneau campus is investigating several different options right now of how they might put in a recreation facility. For those of you who are from Juneau, you know they don't have anything like that here. There's no ice rink. We have more and more students who are residential students at the Juneau campus, and there is a need to have some sort of a facility available. This is a very simple facility, nothing fancy. It's got a running track and an ice rink and a couple of basketball courts. The options that they're looking at right now are really partnering with the private sector. We're looking at selling the Bill Ray Center, where we may have some proceeds from that we can put towards this. So there are other options, none of which involve general funds. So we will be putting in a budget, an amended budget request to try to make sure that we get this program receipt authority included in our budget for this facility. So I'd ask you to please favorably consider that.
Wendy, the $4 million we approved last year, that was more or less the revenue from the Bill Ray Center, wasn't it? Wasn't that what that was kind of tied into, if you sold the Bill Ray building?
I don't remember that ended up actually being included in last year's budget.
Well, yes, it was. And the $4 million was the estimated cost of the project 2 years ago. When they've come back and done a reassessment, the project's increased to 4.8. So they're aggressively looking for funding options. But since the project cost has increased 4.8, that's what the extra $800,000 is for.
I understand that, but I just didn't want you to be counting the Bill Ray Center twice, the sale of that building, because we counted that last year. So I would just ask you to the $800,000 of program receipt authority to make sure it's a little more identified than using something we used last year.
No, it's not what it's not what we used last year. It's right now. It's an unidentified source.
Okay.
But they are actively pursuing different options.
Other questions? Wendy, just in general, how big is your Y2K request? Or maybe Senator Wilkins has.
5.8.
5.8.
Okay. Do you have anything else, Wendy? Then, does anybody care to go into the out years on the capital? I think we can look that over and get a hold of Wendy or whatever. Anybody, Ann or Pat? Anything you'd like to say from Fairbanks? Anything you'd like to add?
No, I think it was covered.
Okay. Monday schedule, we have OMB giving us a cash flow overview. We'll start the meeting out. Senator Parnell will chair that. Since we're not going to have a meeting on Tuesday due to the Economic Forum and Summit, which we'll all be attending, we will hear a couple bills after we get through with the cash overview, which will be SJR 4 and SB 35. The one is the resolution on the ballistic missile, and the other one is marine pilot. And then we'll also bring back up missions and measures and maybe SB 6 if we get anywhere with that zero fiscal note bill that we struggled with the last week or so. Senator Wilkins.
We'll look forward to that.
Yeah.
I'll be late Monday morning. If I get out of here, I'll be on the early plane time Monday morning. So wandering about 10.
All right. Senator Adams.
Maybe this is too early, but will we have a spending plan for our spending, operating, and capital? The reason I'm asking is basically that under the governor's capital, he has in general funds between $81 and $83 million to match everything else. And taking the university budgets here, and they have one project, and there's the Hutchinson Career Center, but there's a lot of requests in here. And I'm wondering if that the capital committee would look at a bond concept, that we can put a bond package together for education. It's not only for higher education, but K-12 also around the state of Alaska. I just wonder if that's going to be a possibility to look at when we're in the subcommittee.
Senator Donnelly.
Chairman, I'm open to that idea. I was open to it last year. General obligation bond, go out to a vote of the people whether or not they want to encourage Ed to do those things.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, we'll stand adjourned until 9 a.m. Monday.